This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The year was 1957. 1957, my mother had just trained us kids to memorize Psalm 8. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. What is man that you are mindful of him, and the Son of Man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower than Elohim and have crowned him with glory and honor and put all things under his feet. Well, in October 4th, precisely, of 1957, an event took place in the world that turned everything on its head. It was the launching of the first satellite, Sputnik. Russia launched the first satellite, Sputnik. And it had such an effect upon our world and upon the United States of America and upon young men and young women in the United States of America that it seemed to change everything. Here's what happened. Math and science exploded. It just exploded. And in the context of that, I was in the eighth grade. And in the eighth grade, I was now being prepared with the advanced form of mathematics called algebra. And boy, did I feel like I had uppityness in the math field at the age of 13. Well, what I didn't realize is some of my cohorts there at the very same school were far beyond me in terms of the understanding of mathematics and science. In fact, one of them proved to be one of the most extraordinary geniuses in the area of science and math ever to have hit the doors of the foremost institution called Caltech. In fact, he actually tested out of the first four or five math courses at the foremost engineering school in the country, the California Institute of Technology, and he was my friend in the eighth grade. It was an explosion of science and math everywhere, and it sort of got a hold of my mind and my heart, and I didn't begin to have the kind of savo, the kind of insight that these guys had concerning math and science. But I did understand Psalm 8. What is man that you are mindful of him, Lord, and the Son of Man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower than the angels and have crowned him with glory and honor. Looking at the universe and what has been made, what in the world is man that you would consider him? Well, apparently, as we move on through history, we find out that the universe itself and all of creation seems to be the result of math, mathematics. And that may go way beyond those of you who are listening here today. Maybe you're way beyond any of understanding that I ever had concerning math, because I thought I loved math until it no longer loved me, because it was way beyond my pay grade. But today on Viewpoint, we have a special guest joining us, Dr. William West, who has written a fascinating book called Sacred Science, Understanding Divine Creation. And he says it's a lot related to mathematics. Well, I hope you'll stay tuned, friends, because he and I are going to have to do a good job of translating what sacred science really looks like. And so, Dr. West, it's good to have you on the program. You're known as Bill, so from now on I will call you Bill, if that's all right.
That's perfect, and I'm going to call you Chuck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So this matter of our world, our universe, we do our best to try to understand. There have been those who have gone before us, whether it's guys like Einstein or one of my favorites, Newton. I actually wrote a term paper on Isaac Newton and his Principia in high school. So math really was a big deal for me, and apparently it was for him. And he actually wrote more on prophecy than he did on math. And yet he's the one that gave us some of the clear rules that defined how the universe works. So how are we to understand this creation thing and science and sacred science? What's that all about?
Well, you know, I'll give you an example. It takes 10 separate equations to understand space-time. And so I decided to just simplify things, and instead of using the equations, I called them blueprints.
Ah.
And I label space-time as one of the 8 essential blueprints of the universe. So I did sort of a cheat sheet and simplified things down to something I could understand. I certainly couldn't write the 10 equations of space-time, but I could understand space-time as one of the essential blueprints that made our universe.
All right. Well, you're an MD, a medical doctor from Harvard
right.
College and Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and a National Cancer Institute and all of these titles and all of these experiences. So what prompts you as a medical doctor to write a piece like this, Sacred Science?
Well, I think the lead key to me was reading about 4 years ago that the number one growing, I'll call it denomination of the faith, describes themselves as none. N-O-N-E.
And
it worried me a little bit, and I dug a little bit deeper into it, and it turns out that they have turned to science as their handle on their beliefs, which then raised the question in my mind, well, what science are they talking about?
Exactly.
So I spent about a year trying to understand what kind of handle they were receiving.
Well, it's called scientism.
Well, that certainly is a philosophy that science is the only source of truth.
Yeah, and we need to talk a little bit about that because that's invaded our whole country, in fact, the world, and is considered one of the premier alternate religious belief systems.
It is. I approach the science a little bit differently in terms of trying to understand what were the 8 key blueprints. You
right.
see there, I'm using blueprints and not equations. That built the universe. And it took quite a bit of time to put them together, but
I'm
then
sure
I realized each one of them is just a super intelligent, beautiful piece of art. I mean, our God is just so unimaginable, really, and you talk about a mathematician, but the designing of those 8 blueprints that poured out of what we call the Big Bang and built this universe, to me, are just works of art. And
it's almost as if God himself is like math incarnated, because everything that he has created, ultimately we find, or it seems to find, that it's ultimately connected to mathematics and can be only understood in a scientific way from that viewpoint. That's beyond most of our pay grades, and so we need to use the term blueprint rather than equations, I think.
I like blueprint. You know, my favorite example is what's called the Higgs field. Here we go.
I'll tell you what, this is so deep and so big. We're going into a break here. There's no way you can translate it in the next 30 seconds. So let's talk about this Higgs boson thing. I think it's sometimes referred to as the God particle. We'll get to that in just a few moments, friends. We're about to enter into a journey here, the sacred science that you might just want to be connected with. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're talking about the most important issues of our time. Today, we're talking about science. We're talking about the mathematics of science. in as it relates to creation, as it relates to the existence of all things, whether it's the broader universe, whether it's the earth, whether it's our mortal bodies and their functions, all of it seems to be directly related to not only sacred science, but mathematics. So our guest today says that sacred science helps us to understand divine creation. It's a tremendous book, over 400 pages, hardbound, and it's a $35 book, but it's yours, according to my producer, it's yours on our website today for $27, and that's why I want to offer it to you. I know that not everybody is going to be fascinated because not everybody has that same explorative interest that many of us do. But this is going to be a book that is going to be eye and heart opening. It's going to open a door for understanding that perhaps you have never had. And our guest today, Dr. West, Bill West, is the translator for this. So go to our website, saveus.org, and you'll find Sacred Science, Understanding Divine Creation, $27 right there on the website. You give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check and $6 for postage and handling. Okay, Bill, we need to go. You're not that science, Bill, are you, that was on television for so long?
Oh, no.
Oh, good, 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 good. Okay. You're a different Bill.
I'm a cancer specialist. I'm a medical oncologist.
Okay. Well, we need those too. Hey, listen, you were going to introduce to us this Higgs boson particle and all of that chat. What is that all about? It sounds pretty mysterious.
Well, you know, the mystery really was what gives us mass. Now, people know mass probably better as weight. That's the gravitational effect on our weight reflects our mass. And how did we go? Let's take the other extreme. Light has no mass, and therefore it sets the speed limit of the universe. It travels around planet Earth 7 times a second.
Wow.
And we obviously couldn't build a physical universe with light. So God planned a system that converted light into particles that could be encoded with mass and build physicality, make it a physical universe.
Okay, is this what they call the God particle?
I never have loved that term, but yes. That is, it is the Higgs boson. We live in the universe is an ocean of Higgs bosons. Mm. And it's their job to encode the little parts of the atom with mass. And so this Higgs ocean, this Higgs field, gives us a physical universe, or otherwise we wouldn't have planets, we wouldn't have Earth, we wouldn't have life. So it's a fundamentally important thing, and discovered when Peter Higgs looked at an equation. And he thought to himself, you know, if that equation really existed, if it had been actualized, it would explain this deep mystery of our physical universe. How did we acquire mass?
A simple equation?
And, that's right. I mean, it's an equation.
A plus B equals C, and a simple equation? Wow.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but it is an equation. And so that prompted a search for the Higgs boson. And in he proposed that in 1964, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they produced the Higgs boson in 2012.
All right. So this was produced, or at least conceived, about 7 years after Sputnik was launched in 1957.
Well, you're right.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I think I was in the same grade as you were.
Really? Really? We were grade fellows then.
So you
know what the spirit of the explosion of all of that was in our country.
No, very exciting. Yes.
Okay.
The big mystery was, how did we get physical? Where did we get mass? Light has no mass. So how did light transform? And that, of course, is through the equation energy equals mc squared. Mm-hmm. In other words, energy and mass are the same, are different forms of the same thing.
Well, that was Einstein's middle name, wasn't it? E equals MC squared.
That was one of that's his best equation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and, so where does this Higgs boson relate to experiments that were taking place there in CERN, Switzerland?
Well, they had what's called an accelerator, or you could also call it a particle collider.
Mm-hmm.
And it had enough energy. It takes a tremendous amount of energy to sort of spank space-time and produce these particles, let them pop uh-huh. out of their field. And it was in, you're right, it was in CERN that they proved the existence of the Higgs boson.
So in other words, that's where the God particle thing came from, that we actually, by accelerating this Higgs boson or identifying it, we actually are in the process of becoming God or entering the sphere of God.
I would say we're getting a good view of God's library.
Mm.
You know, we're seeing the work of his unbelievable mind, and
people thought that was entering into the whole spiritual realm, that we were escaping what we knew as Earth out there in CERN, Switzerland, and somehow this was beyond science. This was super science going into the spiritual realm.
Well, it's interesting. I don't make much distinction between the spiritual and the physical. To me, it's God and his work and his production. And he had the ability to convert light, which has no mass, into particles that could obtain mass. And then he filled the universe with the Higgs bosons to deliver the mass.
Hmm.
So he took what would otherwise be just a light show and made this fantastic Earth. I mean, looking out the window in Memphis, Tennessee, and he did a beautiful job. We live on a precious planet.
Well, yeah, we actually had the Northern Lights displayed all across Canada and the northern U.S. this week.
You're right.
And so if light has no mass, what is it they're looking at?
Energy.
Ah.
You're looking at the E of E equals MC squared.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's energy that can be converted to mass through the interaction with these Higgs bosons. We just try to tie it back all together.
Wow. Okay. Now, your book lays things out. You say it's like laying out the blueprint, because you tried to simplify insofar as it was possible. When you start using terms like quark code, it doesn't sound too simple to me. It sounds pretty quirky you have to use some of these terms to kind of connect in with what's happening in our world, don't you?
You know, quark is a difficult term, and I did all I could to think of something alternative. But quarks come in two flavors, and those flavors carry different fractional charge, different electrical charge, and they always combine in teams of three. So I'll do a little science now. Two up quarks with one down makes a proton, and one up quark with two down makes a neutron. So they are the fundamental building blocks of our universe.
And God created them.
He created them.
Whether we understand how they were created, we have discerned that they exist, and God's given us the ability over time to discern that they exist. But why? So that we can be proud and say, look what we discovered? Or is there something more important?
Well, I see it as celebrating God.
Exactly.
I think he actually invites us. I mean, he put us in a perfect position in this galaxy to look out at the universe, and we put up the Hubble Spit Telescope, and we've put up the James Webb Telescope, and we're looking 13 billion years back at light that's been traveling ever since the creation of the universe.
Well, at least we think that's 13 billion years.
Well, that's right.
As best we, in our scientific interpretations, develop that idea, but it may not be that.
Well, you're certainly right. There's multiple interpretations ranking.
I mean, it could be that if God could create all of those things out of nothing, he could have installed the universe instantaneously. Could he
yes,
not?
Yes, he could. Or in 6 days.
Or in 6 days. You see, so now we're really baffling science, which science cannot necessarily be dependent upon to tell us the truth. It's only investigative and comes through with theories about the truth, some of which prove
right.
true, some of which prove partially true, and some which prove not true at all, right?
You're absolutely right, and the only ones to believe are those that can be proven wrong. In other words, a good scientific theory has to set itself up to be falsifiable. And if it can't be, well, then it's just make-believe. So we have certain theories that have set themselves up now since the middle of the 1900s,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to be standing the test of time. And I think one of those is the Higgs boson and the physicality that the Higgs field brings to this universe.
Well, how about the natural laws that Newton described?
Well, gravity.
Gravity, the law of thermodynamics, those
yes.
things have proven to be absolute given, haven't they?
They have. And, of course, gravity's such a fundamental reflection of space-time and space-time warping. And every time I walk down the stairs, I think, wow, this is gravitational pull, and I need to hold on to the rail.
And every time you look in the mirror year by year, you realize that gravity is still working.
That's right.
It's ever present.
Yes. Good point.
Ever present, and it doesn't look so sacred at that point.
But, yeah, well, you're right.
It might look pretty scary as opposed to sacred.
But you're right.
When we talk about sacred, that's a very powerful word, because
yeah.
what you're really saying is the very existence of what we are able to discern as in the field of science actually is discerning the very character, the very power, the very glory of the God who created it all.
You just summarized my book.
The
science that was discovered by these nuns, N-O-N-E-S, is a revelation of God. Once you put them in the right order and you look at them and you see that they're just magnificent, super intelligent, I consider them pieces of art, and how they work together to build this universe. And it's just absolutely irrefutable evidence of this amazing mind behind this universe. And
you talk
God
about,
created.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
You talk about a prophet of scientism thus delivers an ancient challenge to the creator of the universe. Show us a sign.
Right.
So God himself should be subject to the experimental test of science.
Yes,
there is a delicious
scientism.
Irony to this distorted worldview, and that is that everything that exists is a sign. Divine algorithms display their work across the heavens, and the entire universe demonstrates God's creative powers, and therefore, going behind it, God himself. Amazing.
Very good. Very good. I actually wrote that sentence, so I love hearing you read it. But yes, there's a God's sign is fills the nighttime sky. It fills the earth. It fills the life. It's everywhere present. I think that's why Paul said we're not. None of us have an excuse.
He did say that.
Around us.
He did say we're without excuse. Why?
Well, I'm looking out at the most beautiful flowers, and birds are flying around the flowers, and it doesn't take much thought to wonder where in the world did these beautiful plants and animals come from. And, you know, I don't think we spend enough time thinking about that. But
well, we take business as usual. We go through our day. We're driving down the freeway or whatever, interstate
yep.
or whatever you call it.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
The hurrier we go, the behinder we get.
That's
and
right.
we don't participate, we don't view, we don't take knowledge or pay attention to what things are out there. And
yeah.
So we miss out on this experience that you're talking about to actually observe sacred science and have it become real for us. Friends, this book is going to help translate. There's no way in 50 minutes that we can do this adequately. Sacred Science, $27. We'll put this $35 book in your hands on the website, saveus.org.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings. All at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Each cell in our body contains a run-on sentence of DNA 3 billion letters long. And even more remarkably, that run-on sentence of nucleotides or bases delivers 3 separate ingenious codes. All, friends, the very life itself. Consider, many of us behold a newborn infant as a gift from heaven. Imagine the miraculous activity that converts a 4-cell embryo into a fully formed human being. Master genes dispatch organ-specific stem cells to their target tissue, writes our guest today in his book. Build a heart here, limbs there, begin forming eyes and ears and a brain. Within each organ, DNA dispatches an armada of messages to make new cells at a furious pace, assuring that each cell contributes to its team. And it gives each cell its own book of life, all 3 billion letters of the DNA. And each cell then builds 10,000s of proteins. Proteins are architects. Well, that's something new to me. Now I need more protein. Our architects building our tissues, muscle, and hair. Proteins are our chemists, speeding up the chemical reactions. They create the molecular nanomachines that drive the activities of the cell. They're also important. They also import and export molecules across the cell membrane and straddle the membrane, listening for messages from other cells. If the process was accompanied by music, expectant mothers would be serenaded by a nonstop symphony unmatched by the world's best Philharmonic. These are profound words of translation by our guest today, Dr. William West. Bill, you have really done a job here to try to help us regular people comprehend the glory of creation.
Well, thank you. I take that as a great compliment. Let me give you an example of what you're talking about right now.
Sure.
The average protein has 300 amino acids. There are 20 choices for each one of those amino acids. So there are 20 raised to the 300th power of proteins possible in the universe.
Wow.
And I raise that to just say anybody that thinks we are here as a random act has not contemplated with what I would call the biosphere of protein possibility.
Well, it's a majesty that is beyond majesty.
Yes. And it all comes together in 9 months in a miraculous process that builds these beautiful little infants, and each with the proper organs and everything in its place. And it's just to me, each little baby, each one of us is a wonder.
Well, it's true. And of course, all of the animals out there, the created, each one has their purpose in the ecosphere or environment to accomplish their particular role in the greater panoply and purpose of God. They don't have a, a, a soul, but they have a purpose. And God created us with a purpose. So that leads us then to another element of this sacred science, and that is, what is man that you consider him? It's because man was made in the image of God, right?
Right.
But what does that look like, Bill?
Well, it means we search for meaning. We need purpose. And we also have spiritual hunger. We search for God. He built within us the need to try to communicate with him and connect with him. No animal has that. You know, I love my dogs. They're wonderful, beautiful creatures, but they're not worried about what's going to happen down the road in their future. We do. We get to contemplate, and it's a sometimes painful thing, being a cancer doctor. We get to contemplate our own illness and our own death, and that gives us a really special place in this created order.
Well, it does, and as a cancer doctor, you're not God. You're trying to work with what God has created and try to understand the mechanisms so that you can try to help respond to those for whom God's creation has gone awry through cancer. That's got to be a huge challenge.
Well, it has been. You're trying to understand what's called driver mutations, broken genes. Mm-mm. And then the other part of that equation is the immune response, because our body has a wonderful response. And, you know, we have these beautiful cells called T cells that will kill cancer cells. So we're trying to figure out what's blocked the immune system and how to unblock it. What are the driver mutations and how can we shut them down? So it's been an exciting field, really, to be in. And I think we've got a very bright future in cancer care. I think I was born about 20 years too young or too early. But I think we're going to see a lot of progress in cancer.
Well, you might want to be very careful about taking Keytruda. It's, you know, they're promising so much, but it really is, as in a developmental stage. My own brother got involved in it, and it caused just unbelievable blistering all over his body that was worse than the cancer that it was supposed to remedy.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, doctors are trying. You know.
that's the challenge of our field. Everything we do with the potential to help has the potential to hurt. And
that's true.
It's why medical oncology, that's a fancy name for my field, is a challenge, because you have to try to learn to use these tools to the best advantage.
Especially when you take an oath saying, do no harm.
Yep, that's right.
That is a challenge. Do no harm as an oncologist, and you're pumping people full of poisons.
Yes, sir. Yeah, now my father-in-law, who was a businessman, used to ask me, so you're basically treating people with rat poison. And I'm like, well, you could look at it that way. We try to do it in a more thoughtful, intelligent way by mixing different drugs that have what we call synergy, so that 1 + 1 = 5. But we're making progress. I think there'll be a lot of progress made.
Do you ever feel like you're warring against God in that regard?
You know, I never have. I think I've always felt the invitation from God to come and understand and explore.
I think that's the only way you could live with yourself.
I think so.
Yeah. You're working with sacred science, and medicine is part of that sacred science, isn't it?
I think so. I really do believe that. And I think most physicians, you know, 60% of physicians are deep believers. And I think most of us approach it with that spiritual concept, that we're looking at God's fundamental gifts, trying to understand how they can go awry, how they can be broken, and what can we do to fix them. And it's a slow and tedious process sometimes, but again, we have made progress.
Yeah, sin made progress too. Ever since Adam and Eve, and the consequences of sin, its echoing consequences to undermine what God had created and distort it, have made massive progress. Cancer itself is very likely one of the results of that, as well as many other things that go awry in our bodies today. So When you deal with something like, I don't know whether fools rush in where angels fear to tread, Bill, but when you deal with someone who, like a leading conservative political figure who declares that his homosexuality is a gift from God and has drawn him closer to God and Christ, what do you make of that in the context of sacred science?
I try to have some compassion for people who are of different orientation. It's
or feel that
job.
Way.
Yeah, I don't see it as my job to try to judge that. You know,
Well, you have to discern. I think maybe judge is not the right word. Judge means to condemn. You certainly have to discern. Otherwise, you would not be able to read what the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans chapter 1, that when you glorify God, when you know God, you don't glorify him as God, and he gives you over to a reprobate mind. And then all of these practices that are perversions of the creation order all the way back to Genesis chapter 1 begin to take place. That's a discerning spirit, not a judging spirit.
Got it.
Yeah. So, you know, don't put yourself down for discerning those things, but as a scientist, a doctor, I'm just curious how you deal with that when somebody's claiming that the very, very perversion or distortion of God's perfect order is actually his blessing.
Well, you're getting at one of life's most difficult questions. And as a general rule, physicians try to shy away from that topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's politically impossible to deal with, and you don't want to get kicked out of the medical associations of the country, which you will do if you go too far in, you know, maintaining those things. So it's you ride a very, very delicate line there, don't you?
You do. And I would guess in my own personal practice life, I focus on the problem that presents itself very specifically. In other words, not holistically, but this person has this cancer. Mm-hmm. How do I treat it? What drugs would work?
Yeah.
What immune therapy would work?
Yeah.
So I try to focus on the practical side as best I can.
So you become like a almost like a medical mechanic then.
That's probably right.
Yeah, a medical mechanic. And in many respects, medicine is sort of like that, isn't it?
I think so.
Somebody created the car. Somebody created the engine, but it goes off balance, and now you got to come in and try to fix it.
Well, you're right. My dad was a surgeon, and he believed that, you know, no doctor was any worth anything that wasn't a surgeon. I took the second set of boards in medical oncology. He called me and asked me where I was going to train in surgery. I said, Dad, I'm not going to be a surgeon. But I'll give you a little story that tells you why not. My mother.
Well, can you share that with me after the break? I really would appreciate it. I want to hear it.
Please.
Friends, again, the book, Sacred Science, Understanding Divine Creation. This goes into things that we can't begin to talk about on the air today, but you're going to understand. $27 on our website, saveus.org.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint, friends. Our viewpoint concerning creation, concerning the existence of all things, whether terrestrial or out there in the broader universe or right down here in our very bodies that we carry around here with two legs. All of this and how we understand this is relating to where we really put our trust. And that's what God's after all, no matter what. It's not information he's after. He wants us to trust him. Has he given us enough information to do that through the investigation of sacred science? Our guest today says, absolutely, and I agree. So he's going to tell us, Bill, you're going to tell us a little bit about your history going back. Go for it.
Well, I was only 21 when my mother developed breast cancer and recurred in her lung. And the treatment, I found hard to believe, was to remove the lung. And I think today, in the modern day, we all realize just how foolish and painful that was.
Mm.
And what we needed was medication, and we needed to be able to treat it like an infection. And that's what we've done in the field of medical oncology. We've tried to move away from the mutilating surgery and toward drugs that do have side effects, but they are much more effective and much more humane and slow progress, but still progress. We are making progress. And,
well, that certainly gave you a basis for going into medical oncology, didn't it?
Boy, it sure did.
Wow. And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and also the immune system. We really always have thought if we could understand the immune system, we would make a great stride forward in the treatment of cancer. And we have done that, although I hear your brother getting Keytruda and having a bad reaction. If we could successfully get our immune system to see these abnormal cells, a T cell will kill a cancer cell. But there's not even close. A T cell will knock it off fast.
Wow.
And God has given us that defense.
Well, that's medical warfare.
That's right. That's in our body every day. We have cells that are circulating, surveying, looking for abnormal cells and killing them early before they have a chance to become fully malignant.
How wonderful is that?
Yeah.
So why is it they're not always successful?
Well, mutations can happen quickly and also more than one. And all of a sudden you have a cell that's just not part of the team. You know, it's lost its connectivity, its purpose.
We've seen people like that in our churches. Whole church splits.
Yeah, little walking around cancers in the church.
Yeah, it happens in families too.
Yeah.
Well, so help us to understand a little bit more detail these immune systems, because that's a big deal, a really big deal, and we don't see our immune system.
No, we don't, and it's so wonderfully elaborate. When you really begin to understand it, it's another moment of, oh my God, look what you have created. We have multiple kinds of white blood cells. They each do different sorts of things. One is sort of a hand-to-hand combatant, a T cell. Mm-hmm. One makes guided missiles called antibodies. That's the B cell. And then we have a whole variety of other kinds of cells that God has produced in our body to try to keep cancer just controlled in a way. And it works pretty well. I mean, I'm in the city of St. Jude, by the way, so I'm very, very aware of cancers happening in precious little children.
Mm.
But
are you working there in St. Jude Hospital?
No, I'm not a pediatrician.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Yeah.
I'm an adult oncologist. But what a wonderful institution to have, by the way.
It's Well, you see their ads and so on. It's pretty heartrending. When you see that. But, as human beings, everything that we see that is created, if we pay attention, it should rend our hearts. It should cause us to spill over with amazing joy at the majesty of the God who has created all of this. And then I would think that it would bring a reasonable person to humble him or herself before such a God and say, I don't understand you, but I want you to understand me, and I want to be part of what you're doing. I want to submit to your word, your will, and your ways. Shouldn't it bring us to that?
Well, it should. And, you know, my mother was such an amazing Christian, and she infected me with Christ when I'm just a little fella.
That's great. Is that where you learned Psalm 8, too?
I'm not sure I learned Psalm 8, but I sure did learn what it meant to go to church and stay awake during the sermon.
Because she had some physical antibodies that were there to correct you.
She'd have sometimes openly, huh? And wake me up if I thought about going to sleep.
Okay, you have kids?
I do. I have 2 daughters and I have 8 grandchildren.
Wow. Well, good for you. And how have you been able to translate to them the glories of God's creation? What have you done in that regard?
That's a fascinating question. You know, we try to have family discussions. And of course, we have prayer at every meal. Mm-hmm. And, well, actually, half our family is Catholic and half of us are Methodist. So we have 2 different faiths represented,
wow.
all the same God. And so we have a lot of interesting discussions.
You mean God isn't schizophrenic? And he doesn't have multiple personalities, I guess.
I guess not. Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. So you've got all these kids and grandkids, and do you think they really have the same kind of appreciation you have for the glories of creation and the God who made it so that they would humble themselves before him and be willing to obey his voice?
Well, you know, I have a 25-year-old in nurse practitioner school at Duke,
and I
have a 2-year-old here in Memphis. So I have the gamut. We get to see a broad range of ages, and it's. Do you have grandchildren? I bet you do.
I have 10 grandchildren, 2 great grandchildren, and the challenges never cease.
That's wonderful, and I know you're like most of us. The grandchildren are the best part of life, and I just adore them, and we have great discussions. And
well, that's good. So. Yeah. How long have you been practicing medicine?
I moved back to Memphis. I promised my future father-in-law I would move home to Memphis because that's where he had a big family here, and my wife was here. And so I didn't have a choice when I finished my work in Washington at the National Cancer Institute, which incidentally is the best university in the nation. You know, it's... Each professor is a world-class expert, and they have very few students. You know, if you're a fellow there, you're just very lucky because you have a lot of access, unlimited equipment.
Uh-huh.
It's a fabulous place to do cancer research. But I was obligated to come home, so I came home to Memphis and started a little practice with my oldest daughter finger painting in the waiting room. and so now we have 750 employees and delivered most of the cancer care for this part of the country. So
wow. Well, it sounds to me like you are what we lawyers would call an expert. If I would have brought you on to the stand as an expert witness, I would have had to qualify you to be able to speak and asked you a number of very pointed questions. And now you have satisfied that so that our listeners here now can realize that you're not speaking just off the cuff. You're right in the midst of the fray, up to your eyeballs and beyond. And it's amazing that you have avoided what I call scientism. It's not science, it's scientism, which some people call an exaggerated trust in the methods of natural science applied to all areas of life and investigation, an overconfidence in the efficacy of scientific knowledge and methods. In other words, you put your trust in science rather than in the God who created everything that you can study in science. And it becomes a kind of idolatry, doesn't it?
It does. And it really, it offends me, actually. You know, I find scientism a disturbing phenomenon. And it tries continuously to penetrate our culture. And
I think we found a lot of that with the Dr. Fauciism when he continued to say, well, you know, follow the science, when in fact he wasn't following the science. He thought he was Science Incorporated. And it was an exaggerated view of science, trust in the efficacy of the methods of science. And the reality is you can't trust all of that because they're just methods. They're testing and evaluation and reassessing and testing and evaluating.
Right.
And you may or may not arrive at a truth, an absolute truth, but to say that science is absolutely the sole and primary pursuit of truth is, in fact, seeking to become God yourself, isn't it?
Right. Well, that is scientism. I think you just defined it. And good science goes nowhere near that philosophy. You know, it.
And yet, it's the most authoritative worldview in much of the world today. They say just follow the science. Well, why don't the same people say follow God?
Well, that's a fascinating question.
well, we do that kind of thing on this program.
Chuck, I'm going to come back to the statement that God is inviting us to study his science.
Exactly.
You know, okay. I think he's saying, glorify me by understanding my works. And that's the way I view it. I view good science as understanding what God has done for us and how incredible it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why I wrote a book called
Exactly.
Sacred Science.
And you did a good thing. I know what it's like to invest yourself like that. I'm in the process of right in the middle of my 12th book. And this is an investment. You feel like God has motivated you, in a sense, called you to write this book, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. It took 3 years to do, so I'm not going to match you in number.
Well, it takes me about 2.5-3 years to write a book, and they're not little 100-page things. They require. In fact, I've handwritten every book, believe it or not.
Oh boy!
Every single one handwritten because it's such a close connection with that, the words and the paper and so on. So this book, friends, is worthy, very worthy of your consideration. Sacred Science, Understanding Divine Creation. It's a $35 hardbound book, yours for $27 on the website, saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Now, I just want to warn you, Bill, that there in Memphis, just be careful because the spirit of Egypt is heavy there. You've got this monstrous pyramid, and God calls us to come out of Egypt over 400 times from Genesis to Revelation. So just be careful you don't get wrapped into the spirit of Egypt there in Memphis.
Well, unfortunately, it's the NBA. It's the Memphis Grizzlies. And my wife loves it, so I have season tickets. So.
Well, it's been a joy chatting with you. I really appreciate it. Interestingly, a mathematician, Alexander Grothendieck, in 1971 called scientism the new universal church.
Wow.
You're talking about God, and he's talking about science as if it were God.
Oh, wow.
That differentiates it right there. Thank you so much, Bill. God bless, and I trust that he will bless and honor the work that you have done here. And friends, become
God
a partner
you,
with
Chuck.
Us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Friends, we'll become a partner with us. We're confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home. God bless. Be a blessing. Go to the website. Make your generous contribution that way. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.